Hey, what's going on, guys? I just checked the clock and taxation is theft. Welcome back. I have with me today Sarah Dagger Stewart, who is a sex work activist. Say hi.
Hi.
How's
Are they
it
supposed to say hi? I'm going to say hi too. Is that okay?
going? Yes, everybody say hi. Let's all get high. So, how's it going?
Going good. It's going really good. I'm in Louisiana, just a little north of New Orleans, and it just finished raining, which my pond in the backyard needed the rain because it's getting really low. So everything seems to be going pretty well right now.
Awesome. Awesome. So I know you're really excited because within it has it been a month already? It's been a month now.
It doesn't seem like it.
I think it
But
has been. We had this convention in New Orleans. All the crazy libertarians got together and we decided to amend the platform to have what?
a new plank. We actually, it's a new plank completely. It's a sex worker plank. And I'm very, very happy, very, very proud of my party for supporting this sex worker plank. And it basically, if you have the language in front of you, but it's basically advocating or supporting the decriminalization of sex work. So I'm very, very happy about that.
Yeah, I do have it right here actually. So it says the I think this is the official copy. The Libertarian Party supports the decriminalization of prostitution. We assert the right of consenting adults to provide sexual services to clients for compensation and the right of clients to purchase sexual services from consenting sex workers. It
Yes, that.
sounds it sounds obvious, like it's like one person should be able to buy something from somebody else. Like really? You had to fight to get that written? And of course it's but I guess, on one hand, a lot of libertarians kind of already thought this way, and putting it here is really just it's a statement, but the next battle is what? You need to actually get it decriminalized.
Well, it's interesting that you said that. It's almost like we planned that. It's great that we have the statement, and it does seem very obvious. And it's actually obvious to a lot of people that consensual sex would be legal. The illegal part is the exchanging of goods for that service. But it's part of our issue as sex worker advocates is the narrative that's put out in society. When I talk to individuals outside of the party, most of the individuals that I speak to one-on-one or in a small group or even a larger group, not too often in a larger group because people are very uncomfortable about sex. There's something still to this day, a little
Yeah.
taboo about sex. Even when I say something and everybody knows, it's rare that I go a week without saying something like sex work is work, just to, remind people, even though all my friends know. People giggle or, they make some funny joke or something. It's that uncomfortable relationship people have with sex. And it's odd. But we all know it's there. So, but when you're talking to individuals, most individuals don't want a man or a woman to go to prison because they consensually want to exchange services. But there are some groups that do. They're in unlikely people you wouldn't expect. One of our biggest advocates against sex work are the feminist groups, not these younger feminist groups, because there's several generations of feminists,
Right.
but the feminist groups are one of our biggest challenges that we have. Same people that want to end pornography. So yes, in the Libertarian Party, when you say we shouldn't arrest people for sex work, the majority almost unanimously would say yes.
Well, you go into a libertarian circle and you say you shouldn't arrest people for, and people are already just cheering you on. So,
right, exactly. So what was really great about this this platform was that we used the word decriminalized. That was great. A lot of us hear legalize and we think, you know, well, you're not getting arrested for it, but you don't understand the repercussions of what that term legalized means. And for right. sex workers, it means that you're going to have to go. Look at Nevada. You're going to a brothel. The brothel sets the terms. The brothel takes half your income. And you have to comply to all these rules and regulations that most sex workers really comply to anyway. But now they're having to pay this huge amount of money to do it. And so we want to see decriminalization, because most sex workers now, the majority of them out in the community now, most of them are not only complying to the same regulations that those in brothels do, just on their own, because it's their body and they want to make sure that they're protecting it, right? Because this is the goods that they're selling. They don't want to get any diseases or illnesses that they're going to have to live with the rest of their life. So they're already doing that, but when you're forcing them into these other situations, you have a lot of secondary concerns about what's going to go forward. So a lot of those areas in Nevada, you actually see a lot of illegal sex work still because of the huge expense that these different individuals, mostly women in the brothels, are having to comply to.
And this is like the same thing we see. In Colorado, where marijuana is legal, we still see black market drug dealers because of the cost of getting started. And it's you know, it really is the same thing as, you know, if you want to cut hair, oh no, you can't just cut hair. You need to work for a salon that's licensed, and like it's right. It's really just that.
Exactly. It's just that, and that's one of the problems with all of these licenses that we're having to get. Louisiana, I think we have actually in this state, we have more occupational licensing than any other state. I mean, we have like 80. To braid hair, you have to have a license. To sell flowers, you have to have a license. So. And I'm sure there's somewhere out there, there's a black market forest.
I guarantee you.
Absolutely. I know there are people braiding
hair. Hey man, I got these flowers. They fell off the back of a truck.
Don't know it. How much did that person be fined? And when they don't pay their fine, how long should they sit in prison?
5 years, 5 years minimum. Those flowers are dangerous. Think of the children.
Y'all know, right, it's for the children. Y'all know where those flowers have been. So,
yeah.
Right. So I was very happy. We have to normalize that language of decriminalization. I was very happy about that. So now one of the things that I'm working on, I actually had I have a call that I'm waiting for from the Sex Worker Outreach Project. I want to see if I can connect all of the different states with a sex worker advocate so they can talk more about kind of like what we're going to be talking about today. And it's the war that we're going to have to fight, basically.
Yeah.
We can say we want sex work decriminalized and it's great, but when people start coming at us with stuff like, well, human trafficking and those numbers, we need to understand what they're actually saying, what data they're using, and what the real numbers are.
That's, yeah, definitely. I want to talk about that, because I've spent a lot of time with a good friend of mine who's an ex-cop and a lawyer, a criminal defense lawyer, and I've heard some pretty, like, I know how the government skews statistics. And so, you know, they tell you one thing and it really means something completely else, but it's to serve an agenda. But before we get into that real quick, Brandon Finney is asking the question right now. Do you know Brandon?
I know Brandon.
Okay. So he's asking, how can we get all of the LP state affiliates to adopt the sex work plank?
Well, Brandon is awesome. He's actually a state representative in New Hampshire, and he's running again right now. So shout out to him. Give him some support, guys. He actually just, and I wanted to mention this too, New Hampshire just adopted a platform themselves for sex work. And so it's just a matter of having somebody that's involved in the state level that either can talk to me or talk to some other advocate or just look at what our national platform is, copy and paste that. There's some other organizations that I know, there's some other caucuses that have some sex worker language. I believe the Audacious Caucus is one of them that has a great plank in their platform. Louisiana, we adopted one as well, but we need to talk to the different states, let them understand why it's such an issue. You know, we have some new laws that have been put in place that's actually making even more dangerous sex work, which didn't know that was going to be possible, but it has happened. I always forget the acronym. But it's Fight Online Sex Trafficking and the Stop Enabling Sex Trafficking Act, FOSFA. We've heard about that just recently. That got passed. So if we can talk to the different state members, say, hey, guys, this is something we really need to have on our plank on, it would be great. It's an important issue, but it's also important to know what exactly the language that's being what the narrative that they're feeding us outside, what that translates to in reality. Because just like what you were saying just a second ago, you know that what the government tells us is a little different, right? And that's actually how I became a sex worker advocate. I actually worked for the sheriff's department. Working for the Sheriff's Department in the DEA task force. And while I was there, there was some grant that I was reading over, and it was a weed and seed grant that we had. And it actually included prostitution in that grant. And it was like, wait a minute, what? This is strange. I was only there for a couple of months until I saw how bad the drug war was and how it was actually hurting more people than it was helping. There's that whole narrative. It's for the children. It's for your own good.
Right.
Their lives that are destroyed. All of that stuff. It's the same narrative that was there for the drug war. It is there now for the sex war, if you want to call it that. But against sex workers. They want to stop sex work. Or some of them want to just make money and keep a job. There's a lot of people who are making a lot of money by fighting this so-called war, saving sex workers. And it's not ever men, even though there are men in sex work, it's always women and children that they're saving. It's never the men that they're saving. So, you know, you guys, they don't care about y'all. They just care about women and children.
That's how they pull on your emotions. Like, no, you know, if they say, "Oh, we need to save these men from having sex," then it's like, oh, what? They can't manipulate you that way.
Right. So it would be great. I really appreciate New Hampshire and Brandon taking the lead on that and going forward and getting that out there. I think that's awesome. New Hampshire should be. It's the freest state in the country, right? It should be the state that's taking the lead. Interesting thing, though, since we're talking about states taking the lead, and I want to make sure I'm going to look at the study that was done, the name of the study. There was a study done in Rhode Island. They were talking about New Hampshire, and I went there. It was the Economic Bureau, I believe it was. I'll have to look it up for you later, and I'll send you the information. But it actually did a study some legislation happened and changed some things around, and about 10 years later, a judge was looking at that change and said, hey, guys, y'all made a mistake when y'all did this. You accidentally decriminalized indoor prostitution. Now, indoor prostitution meaning you couldn't be on the streets doing it, but you could be in your house doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and he wasn't saying, okay, this is great, but he let them know, hey, we've got to get this corrected. So in the years that it was decriminalized, this economic development study, I think they were going to try to find some show how bad sex work was and how it created this horrible thing. Well, they looked at the crime statistics. They looked at the rates, and nothing got worse. The only thing that changed was rape, and it actually decreased rape. It didn't increase it. It decreased it by 31%.
Wow.
So while sex work was decriminalized, indoor sex work was criminalized, rape decreased. Now, there's not a study showing why. It would be really hard to do that because you have to talk to the rapist and the rapey, and so then you have to, that would be really difficult. You could make the assumption that it's because, well, what? The, not only the provider, but also the client is in a position where they can call the police if something's happening. You know, if one of them are being robbed or abused in any kind of way, they have the ability to call law enforcement and get help, right? Some people make the assertion that, well, maybe because they have an outlet, clients have an outlet, that led to a decrease. Maybe it's both. Who knows? But I would also assume that because they were able to call the police, I just saw an article, a friend of mine who's working on it. She posted it just a couple of days ago. She was arrested. She had a guy was following her, and she was actually arrested for prostitution. She was an escort, and she left. Nothing happened. The guy followed her, apparently, allegedly. And so I believe she's in prison right now. This was just a few days ago. I shared it on my social media just a few days ago, and I haven't looked too far into it because it happens. I see this stuff constantly. I mean, I see this stuff every single day. People share articles about different guys doing different things. And all these are cops too, by the way. So it's really sometimes it's too hard to keep up with. But I would assume that during that time there were more reports, you know, that a higher percentage of rapes that happened were reported than when it was illegal. You follow me?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm trying to think where, like, I've seen examples of this. I know it's kind of always, we see this in probably TV shows and whatever, where it's like, you know, somebody's going to rob a drug dealer and they just come out and say it. What's he going to do? Call the police? It's not right. Like, you know, it's not like something no one's ever thought of before. Like, you know, it's the same reason people attack unarmed victims, because they know they can't fight back. They attack people who can't call the police. Because, you know, they know, what are you going to do? They can harass certain people because you can't call the police because I know what you're doing is illegal.
Right.
So,
it's kind of like
white
people. I mean, really. Yeah. Right. There's actually, she's a provider, and I don't remember what country she's from, but she does a TED Talk, which is really good. I recommend it to anyone. I'll post in the links for anybody to watch if they want to later. I'll post a couple of links in there in the event. And she talks about one of the instances that she was providing, and it was her and a friend of hers. They shared an apartment, and in the country that she's in, that's criminalized, is being in a brothel. There's different types of criminalization. The U.S. is one of the worst countries for criminalization for sex work. We criminalize the sex workers, the brothels, with the exception of the few counties in Nevada. Not all of Nevada is legal, just a few of the counties. It's illegal to be a provider, or it's illegal to be, I think that was covered all of it, or there's decriminalization where you can do whatever. And of course a state would have certain laws, in this country, they might do something different, but. And now we have the new online issues, which that's making it more. But she was saying that she had a client was at her apartment. It was two girls, her and her friend, that lived there. And he said, well, you're going to do this for me for free, or I'm going to call the police on you, because basically what you're operating is a brothel, which is illegal. So, you know, they were able to get out of that situation, but I mean, that happens.
Yeah.
Obviously, we all know that blackmail happens, and you know, if somebody is going to try to show dominance in that kind of way, you know, what's really to keep them from going to an extreme? So, it's sad, and that's kind of the problem now, because we're so criminalized. Sex workers can't protect themselves. And when I say sex workers, and when any advocate says sex workers, we never mean somebody that's forced into that situation. Never. I mean, the biggest advocates for sex trafficking, what's really sex trafficking, not this conflated conversation, because the government wants you to think that all sex work is sex trafficking. Interesting, the Green Party, when you look at their platform, basically says that if you're in sex work, you're not there by your own free will. You're coerced into it because, you know, either your living situation wasn't good enough, and so you can't make that decision for yourself, apparently. You know, we're all about women and men being able to figure things out for themselves, but it's interesting and you think that the Green Party of all parties would empower women, you know, empower individuals, but they're saying not if you're a sex worker. You're not there because you want to be there. Well, you know what? I've had a lot of jobs that I was there because I needed that paycheck, and it had nothing to do with sex work. So you could make that argument for probably anything.
Right.
You know, we work because we want to get a paycheck. We should all be able to decide how we're going to get that paycheck, as long as we're not stealing from someone or hurting someone. It should be our choice.
So what, because I hear this a lot, like the argument that, you know, for anyone to get into that line of business, they're, you know, they were abused or, you know, something like that. And obviously there are, you know, some people do get into that because of abusive relationships. But like, what's, Do you have any kind of statistics as to what percentage of people are like are either coerced in or forced in versus how many people just kind of go there free will, like, hey, I feel like doing this?
I don't have those kinds of statistics, and I'll tell you why. Because a sex worker doesn't want to talk to a doctor, much less anybody else. If you're wearing a lab coat or have pen and paper, they're not going to want to talk to you. So they're not going to want to provide that kind of information. We have recently, a trusted advocate has recently pulled some data on the increase of abuse that they've seen, and the decrease in funding or work that they've received because of the new laws that have been implemented on the internet. But statistics like that are really, really hard to actually get. But I do know that what you see on TV, you know, a girl working under a bridge, that kind of thing, that's not the norm. That is the
You mean TV's lying to us?
Right. I know. Who would have thought? That's not the norm. And maybe in the 70s, 80s, maybe it was. I couldn't say. I was barely alive back then. I didn't know what sex was back then in the 80s. So, but now I think research pretty much those activists, we pretty much would agree that most activists are kind of middle class individuals that work on their own. They don't have a penal. Most sex workers advocate against penal. And again, legalization is basically making government your pimp, you know. So sex workers don't want that. And again, with the laws changing, it's making things more difficult because they can't vet their clients, and the clients can't vet them. You know, both parties going into the transaction are scared. You know, I could go to prison if I gave you the name of a sex worker, or you could go to prison if you asked me the name or phone number of a sex worker, because we would be considered pimps, basically.
Wow.
We would be helping. Yeah. And that's one of the things I do in my PowerPoint for when I go to different state functions. I have in there, you know this, because if you start soliciting and it's an undercover cop, you can go to prison, you know.
That's like this thing that I think it's the Cato Institute says, the average American commits 3 felonies a day. And this is like, right, another one of those things that's like, you know, what if I said, hey, can I have the number of one of these sex workers so that I could interview them on this show? And then, like, you know, some cop says, oh, well, we don't know what your real intent with that phone number was. We're going to assume it was to do business and you're going to jail.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's again, like what I was saying with, you know, collecting data. You know, if you ask a sex worker, I spoke to the NOW group, you know, National Organization of Women.
Yeah.
Typically very left-leaning Democrat types, you know, about women's rights and stuff, and not well received, let me tell you. But I'll talk to anybody, I don't care. And I remember she said this crazy scenario, and I said, well, as highly unlikely as that is, the solution to that would be decriminalize sex work. I talked to another organization, and they were asking me another off-the-wall question, and I said, well, basically the same thing. And he said, well, what if I don't want to decriminalize sex work? I said, well, then you're going to have more of the same. But they both, one was very left, one was very right organization. They both asked me, are you a sex worker? And I said, as I say to everyone, typically everyone, unless my mom asked me, then I'd probably, you know, but I say, I don't share that information, because if I share information about whether or not I'm a sex worker and another individual is with me, as one was at one point, and I say no, I can't say yes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or I can go to jail. And she says, well, I don't want to say.
Right,
well,
then she's guilty by assumption, yeah.
Right, it's kind of like the whole pleading the fifth.
If you don't have anything to hide, right. Yeah. That's crazy.
There's a lot of little things that people don't realize, and again, libertarians, we don't care, right? Or some, I'm sure some do, but we don't want you to go to prison, right?
Yeah.
But it's good to know.
I think that's also another really important part. Like, even if you end up in this lifestyle because you were abused or, you know, really difficult circumstances, is throwing you in prison going to make things better?
Exactly.
I think that's a really important point. And is, you know, because obviously now, well, there is this one circumstance where, okay, so in general, I think the common law philosophy of what a law is supposed to do is to protect people, and there's like some sort of doctrine or something that says a law that's meant to protect one class of people cannot be used to prosecute that class of people. So, for example, if the law is there to protect these women, then that law cannot be used to put these women in prison. But on the flip side of that coin, there's like some laws where if a sex worker is known to have AIDS and continue to keep working, then that's considered more attempted murder and prosecuted right. as that instead.
Yeah. That's a heinous crime. But the thing is they're not actually changing the laws to protect the women. They're keeping the laws there. They're changing the narrative of what they're doing. And one of the examples was that they're calling it trafficking courts. See, they're changing that narrative. They're making it, you're arrested for prostitution, but you're going to trafficking courts.
Mm.
So you're putting a new label on it, even though it's the same thing. So it changes the feeling that people, and again, it's all about feelings, really. It's semantics and feelings here. Traffic court, and then when they're doing a lot of these raids that they're doing, they were doing these raids in the 80s and 90s, especially in the 90s, where the police would go and you know, arrest these individuals on the street. Well, they call those trafficking schemes. Human trafficking schemes. That's what I want to make sure I was getting it right. They're human trafficking schemes. So you're changing what we're hearing as individuals in the public, reading the newspaper, and even worse, the media, because the media, you know, we're real quick to just say, well, the media is that they're just sharing a narrative that the police are giving them. And it's true. But if they knew what they were really saying, what the police were really doing, if they cared enough to get that true, raw information of what they're actually arresting people for, they just believe what they're told.
Right.
And they don't really care, or maybe they do really care, but they've got that deadline of,
well, I think for them, like they even love that, because it, like, you know, they even when they're not playing the government's agenda, they try to sell us, like, you know, shock factor, anything.
Right. Right. It's entertainment news. I actually had someone, that, wanted, news group. I'm trying to think of the individual's name. It was a news group, and she called me, and I was traveling, and she was traveling, and we were talking on the phone for a little bit. And so we were supposed to connect later in that day, and I said, okay, that sounds great. And I sent her a bunch of information, my PowerPoint, and some other raw data that I have that someone else put together. Norma Jean, she's amazing. She does great work. And so I said, you know, here's some stuff to go ahead and get started. I don't want to overwhelm you. Just that one link alone is a lot of information. But this will kind of give you a brief touch of what's actually being said. You're being told something, but I mean, I guess you could compare it to getting a hamburger, and you're being fed a hamburger, and you're like, here, have this, but they don't tell you it's vegan. So this is a sex trafficking or human trafficking sting, but it's not what you think. It's actually, we're just going after prostitutes. The majority of our country, or at least a large percentage of our country, would not tolerate us spending $4,000 on just arresting these individuals. They would not tolerate the amount of money that's spent to do the stings, to arrest them, and then they become more of wards of the state because they can't get
a criminal record, and yeah,
right, yeah. And so, you know, we go, well, why don't you get a normal job? Well, this is a normal job to a sex worker, but you know, but at the same time, even if I wanted to go work at the hospital and be a unit secretary, I couldn't because, you know, I've got this felony on my record.
So this is, you triggered this thought in my head a minute ago, and I want to kind of go back to it. But so when we talk about like what's legal and what's not, so there was this police department in Hawaii, and I'm sure it's the case everywhere else, where they were going to, you already know what I'm talking about. They wanted to change the law to make it illegal for the police to actually have sex with the prostitutes before they arrested them. And the police were fighting this like as if like, oh, well, we don't plan on doing that, but in case it accidentally happens somehow, then we need to make sure it's insane the stuff that they come up with. And then like I've heard of police officers that like they'll sit there and testify, yes, I paid her and I had sex with her, so I know for sure she's, and they're married. And like they're and their wives are okay with this because, oh, well, it's their it's their job. Like, what's the mentality of people? Yeah, it's so insane. Like, you know, and it's like this mentality of the police being above the law is like now, and like now it's like they've got their wives on that line too, believing that. And it's just insane because it's like, this is a really horrible, horrible thing, but you're out there participating in it in order to make a bust. It's just insane.
Yeah, just 2 years ago, we were some of my very good friends who actually are part of the party now too. In Colorado was trying to pass this legislation that would make it okay for sex workers to be able to contact police when they were witnesses to something horrendous happening, like a child being put into sex slavery. Mm-hmm. The thing that they're saying that they need to do all of this, sex workers are saying, hey, let us be the boots on the ground and report this and be witnesses to this. We just ask for some legislation that will protect us, and we won't get arrested for prostitution. We say why we know we don't want to get arrested, right? And the legislation failed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, And that was in Denver, I want to say 2 years ago. It was I think it was 2 years ago. And so that legislation failed. There are a lot of people with a lot of narratives. And sometimes we're saying the same thing and sometimes we're not. When we look at statistics and numbers, the numbers that are being put out there, we have to understand what those numbers mean when they're being put out there. And sometimes it's hard to tell, especially when you don't have the time or resources, meaning, and I'm not saying money because I'm not spending, I spend enough money on doing what I do now as it is. But I have friends who spend a lot of money pulling this data out. So when you start hearing those numbers of 100,000 children are in sex work, and you automatically just assume that's what's happening, right? So when you have somebody that I've been fortunate enough to be able to get connected with, they start pulling this actual data, and they start pulling this data from the FBI website, right? Because who can deny that the FBI website would be bad? I mean, I probably could, but if it's going to be wrong, then it's going to be in their favor, right? So they actually use in here the FBI website. I was going to look up your state, and I think you're in California now, aren't you?
I'm in Mexico now.
Oh, gosh. Look at you. You're moving all over the place. At first, you were in Texas, and now you've moved away to a completely another country. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, there's a little more freedom down here.
Are we putting that wall to keep you out? Is that what we're doing?
But I'm still representing Texas, so I'm still fighting the fight.
Okay, well, good. So I was trying to look up where Texas is, because I know that's where you have a lot of people. So she pulled out, this is the 2000 to 2016 total prostitution arrest by state, adult and juvenile, right?
Okay.
So you hear these numbers. Texas is a big state, so
right, and we've got
the largest numbers.
And we've got, I think it's 2/3 of the border with Mexico, where supposedly all this human trafficking, sex trafficking, the real trafficking is coming from.
Right. So it's actually 2016 is actually less than it has ever been since 2000. I only have the statistics from 2000 to 2016. 2016 for underage, meaning under 18, was 53. That's the whole year, 53 arrests made for underage prostitution.
Are they saying they were arresting the minors, or were they arresting other people that were participating in that?
No, and that's the thing people don't understand, too. In California, you remember a couple of years ago, everybody was so upset because they were making it, they were decriminalizing it. I don't remember if they used the term decriminalize or legalizing it for underage kids or
right.
for underage people. That's because the reason for that is because you don't want to arrest someone who can't consent. If you're saying that a 17-year-old or a 10-year-old, I would argue a 4-year-old couldn't consent to sex. If you were saying that a person is of an age and can't consent, then why are you arresting them for prostitution? That's not like if they're not consenting, they're a victim. So why are you arresting them? So that's why California was passing that, to protect right. who they identified as victims. A lot of people got crazy. They were like, oh, wow, why are you doing that? You know, they don't realize that when you're saying that these people need to be saved, what you're doing is you're putting them in a cage. So it might not always be a police cage. It could be a home of some sort, but you're detaining them for a lengthy period of time. So in Texas, the actual arrests made for total arrests made in 2016 was 4,506 arrests.
And this in Texas?
In Texas. That's in Texas. So that's from the FBI website. She pulled this data in late May and of this year. So again, and I'm looking in Texas, I don't see one single time that in the decade, no, in over a decade, in 16 years, it never was a lower number. So they're saying we have an epidemic. Well, first of all, where are you getting these numbers from? You know, these individuals from these different organizations who typically are faith-based organizations, I hate to say it, they're pulling these numbers out of different manipulated surveys, right. And they're getting millions of dollars, and they're going after something that they despise, which is sex. They're going after sex. Nobody cares, or people do care, but it feels like nobody cares, and it's really hard to get people on board to understand, because they cannot stand the idea of people are there against their will. I can't stand the idea of that either. But the problem is they're tying in the whole thing, and they're using the solution, and their solution is actually what hurts people more than helps them.
Right.
Their solution
let's say out of those 5,000 people, is there any way to know how many of those people were actually, let's call them quote unquote slaves, that were kidnapped and forced into that? Like what people think of when they actually hear trafficking. Because
the FBI has that too. They have it divided out into a, let me see if I can find that real quick. They have it divided out to, here we go. I think this is it right here. That the book is really, you see?
Yeah.
great source right here. Great resource. But that they do divide things out. Let me see if I can, I don't have my glasses on. So let me do this in a state. Arrest for reported crimes. So hard to read this. Burglary, aggravated assault, forcible rape. Yeah, I don't see. It's probably somewhere else in here, but they do have it divided out for those who are actually in sex trafficking and who are not. And in when I've looked at the numbers before, I've gone to the website and I've looked at the numbers before. You might actually have access to a computer right there. You could just pop on there yourself and look it up. The numbers are
what I'm kind of interested
1%
in.
Typically.
Like what? Did you say
it's
1%?
It's like 1%, if even that.
Wow.
Actually.
So, yeah. So what I'm kind of getting at is, so let's say out of these 5,000, there's 50 of them who are, you know, let's say, kidnapped and put in cages. And what the government's doing is they're coming along and they're taking the other 99%, the other 4,950, and the government is taking them and putting them in cages. And so it's like, you know, hey, we heard there's people in cages. We want to save you. We're going to stick you in cages. What?
Right.
That's so backwards.
Right. Yeah, it is. And it speaks to, I think the general population doesn't really care about those who are perceived as criminals. It breaks my heart. I really care about anybody that's in prison for any reason, especially those that are there for victimless crimes. You know, I went to a rally just recently. We had, I carry this sign or a sign similar to it with me up and down Bourbon Street. When I go down there, I'll just walk the sign, and I'm that guy, and I like to do that because I like for libertarians and people like us that care about those that are put in cages. I like for them to see that example of what we can do if we don't have a formal organized group, what we can do by ourselves. You know, we can just plant those seeds and let people know we care. We can let people know that, think about that. If there's not a victim, then why are we putting people in cages? That's costing the taxpayers money and resources. And a lot of it, we can't even really calculate. You can't even quantify, because you're talking about, if I smoked a joint, then I go to prison for 5 years, and I'm away from my family. You know, there's a value loss there. Then I can't get a decent job because I have that on my record. There's a value loss to society there. Not to mention that it's an average of $30,000 every year I sit in prison that it's costing you. So, if you want to talk about the human aspect of it, just being in that cage, you don't have free will. You eat what you're given. If something happens to you, if you're violated, raped, mentally abused, all of these different things, there's really very little recourse there. Most people don't think about those people. They're thinking about what's happening in their day-to-day lives. How are they going to pay the bills? How are they going to be able to feed their own family? And it's funny because a lot of those people are mad because they're paying for welfare. And it's like, it's all connected in some way. Our taxes are so high right now. Think about all that money you could have in your pocket. But people are looking for somebody to be mad at, and people aren't thinking about these human lives sitting in prison. Some of them aren't even guilty. Some of them, they take plea deals because they're scared into it. They don't understand the process. They've been told their whole life that, police officers are good. They care about you. They never do anything to hurt you. Guess what? Police officers are human too. They might not intentionally do anything to hurt you, but they might. And even if they don't intentionally do it, they might still do something to hurt you. Yeah, it's a big thing. We had a couple at in Baton Rouge. We had several sting operations, and again, those sting operations are popping up everywhere, and they're targeting the spas, the massage parlors, right? Mm-hmm. And people, they always jokingly say, "Oh yeah, you go get your happy ending," right? Well, these are very a lot of times these are very refined individuals. They're not real touchy-feely people. They come from very modest backgrounds and cultures, and they're working in a massage parlor because English is not their first language. There's a language barrier. They might know English, but they don't know it well enough to answer a phone for a company or do some other labor.
Right.
So they typically will work in a massage parlor or a nail salon. When I went to this rally on Sunday, I guess it was a week ago, I went inside to talk to the manager because I wanted her to know that we care. I wanted her to know, look, we know you're getting raided. We're sorry. And she said, we're good. These are good girls that don't do anything wrong. And we have the police come in. They take our money. They don't give us a receipt for the money. They just take our money. They're constantly harassing us. And we don't know what to do. And she said, I saw a girl and she was telling him no. And he finally just grabbed her hand and put it on his private areas and arrested her. And so, you know, you don't know if that's the norm or not, but I know that this isn't the way we should be treating individuals. This isn't the way we should be going about to save women or men or children.
Oops. I guess my battery, my battery just died on my camera. You're totally right. And we have these people who are quote unquote there to protect us. And then they go and do all this crazy shit like this. And it really sounds like, I mean, like the stories you're telling me now sound like, you know, the old like mafia protection racket. Like they just go to all the businesses and say, give me your money. Or, you know, we're going to shut you down, or, you know, your place is going to burn down and all this other stuff. And that's really insane. Right. And it's crazy, but, going back to your activism, like even planting seeds, what's like the first thing that kind of jumped into my mind is I'm sure, you know, Sean Jones, he's from Texas. Mm-hmm. He's running for Texas House U.S. Congress. His big thing is jury rights and making sure that, you know, juries know their rights, so that they can nullify. But at the same time, I know a lot of these, prostitution cases because, I mean, these are like, they're relatively small crimes. I know they still do a lot of damage, but you know, there's mm-hmm. those, there's possession of marijuana. There's all these like relatively minor crimes. Most of them never even go to trial because the prosecution does such a great job at just making them so fearful that there's no way they can possibly win, but we'll give you a tenth of the sentence if you just plead guilty, and right. You still get, you know, you still get the criminal record, you still get your life ruined, maybe you don't spend as much money or you're not in the hole for too much time, but the lifelong damage is there, and yeah, it's insane. So we got to keep planting seeds and a lot of people, it's funny. I see a lot of people fighting over what's the best way to do something. And the answer is kind of always yes. Like, you know, like, no, don't do it that way. Do it this way. And it's like, no, there's so many different ways you can attack the problem, and you really have to attack it from all angles because, you know, you can mm-hmm. change the legislation. There's still going to be problems. You can inform the jurors. You're still going to have problems. You really have to right. attack it from every single angle.
Every angle, yes.
Yeah. So that's great. I like seeing that you're doing a lot of stuff with this, and you're reaching out to a lot of people. And I can see that this is actually changing things. So, you know, of course I wish you the best of luck with this. And, you know, we talked, we're going to be working together and see, you know, like I said, we're trying to find a way where we can get all of our organizations to kind of help support each other. Because ultimately, like, that's what we need. It's really tough. Like we're dealing with industries where, you know, people, even taxes, more people are victims of taxes than, you know, people who are arrested for prostitution. But even then, like, people are afraid to speak up against taxation because they think they're alone. And like, that's, that in itself is such a big problem with pretty much every libertarian issue, I think. So it's really great to see that, see what you're doing. And I know, just, you know, you having a voice and speaking out is going to, like, that alone is going to make waves and change everything. So thank you for doing that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Is there anything, before we go, anything else you want to, mention, your website, any legislation that's on the table that anyone should know about, anything special going on?
I would just remind everybody that taxation is theft, and
damn right
make
it
sure
is.
You're educated. And, you know, if there's anything I can do to help connect, anybody with a sex worker advocate, I'll be happy to. You know, I'm actually going to be running for state representative.
Awesome.
And hope, yeah, I'm going to vote no to every single new tax that comes through, because taxation is theft. I'm going to be trying to repeal any law that I possibly can, especially
awesome.
If it has to do with victimless offenders, and any commercial licensing that I can get rid of. I'm going, just whatever I can do. It probably won't be much of anything on my own, but at least I can be a voice out there for the public. Like, we have so many other voices. So I would just say, if you can find somebody locally or near you that you can support that's running for office, I would just ask you, please do that. And if I can connect you to anyone, let me know, send me a message. And thank you so much for talking with me today.
Awesome. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way? Your Facebook page?
Facebook is fine. My email address is Stewart, Stewart, as in Sarah, 1776 at gmail.com. You can email me there.
1776. I like it. All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for coming on, and it's been great talking with you, and we'll have you again soon. Definitely, once you get into your campaign and start running, I'll definitely want to hear about that.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Taxation is theft. We'll see you later.
Bye.